I'm Katie Kempner, and welcome to Perspectives, which is a series of inspiring conversations with remarkable working women. And today, I truly have a remarkable woman for us to talk with. I'm so excited. My guest is Joy Soeing, columnist for the Houston Chronicle. Joy, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Katie. It's a pleasure to be here, and I am just happy to be able to talk with you.
So let's just start. I mean, you have and have had such an amazing career in life. Could you tell us a little bit about your career journey just to start?
Well, I'm a journalist, and it's something I've always wanted to be since I was a little girl. I did not have a plan B, so this had to work. And I've worked all over the country at different newspaper outlets, and have been at the Houston Chronicle for a little while. I was a fashion editor for more than a decade, and I transitioned into being the culture columnist in 2020, and now I am a news columnist. So it's been a wonderful journey, and I still love being a journalist.
So in 2023, you became a news columnist, and you became the Houston Chronicle's first Black news columnist in its 122-year history. So I'm not sure if I should ask what this meant to you, or ask the Chronicle why this took so long, but could we please talk about the significance of that a little bit?
Of course. You know, it's interesting when this went, it almost went viral, and I didn't even know it. I knew that I was moving into this job. I had no idea that I was the first. As you said, and it went almost viral on social media that this was, you know, such a big deal. And there were, and I watched the comments, and some people were saying, well, why did it take so long? And, you know, I can address that by saying, I don't know. I'm sure that we can probably guess as to why, but we also have our first female publisher in 122 years. So I think we are still making first in many spaces, and I don't want to get so much caught up in why it didn't happen. I'm here, and I'm hoping that I will continue to be able to tell stories and cover my community and issues that I'm impacted by, that my community is impacted by in a great way. So that's really what I'm focused on.
Well, that makes sense. Let's talk more about your column, please. Yeah. You know, you just mentioned a tiny bit what you focus on. Could you delve in a little more?
Sure. So when I was a culture columnist first, and I really focused on telling the stories of the culture of Houston. Houston is a very ethnically diverse city. And when I moved into this role in December, I'm more focused on issues like Roe v. Wade, women's reproductive rights, immigrants' rights, rights of students to voice their opinions on campus, inequities in healthcare, the gamut. I seem to have a lot of issues going on right now that I chime in on, and I'm able to offer some perspective as a woman, as a mother, and as a journalist.
So in this time, in such a divisive, divided country, divided world, culture, politics, very upsetting, really. But it's so difficult to find unbiased news coverage, or even, I won't say intelligent news coverage. But maybe my question is, in such a divided world, what is the best way, do you believe, for news outlets to be talking about what's happening in the world?
Oh, wow. That is...
That's heavy. I know.
That's a heavy question.
From your point of view.
Well, I think what I find myself now in this role, I'm doing a lot more research and doing a lot more homework. Mm-hmm. And I try not to weigh in on subjects that I don't have a strong opinion about. And because I don't want to give a perspective that's maybe not exactly what I feel in my soul, in a way. I think it's important that all journalists really do their homework and really look at the issues And I just want to say this. I think there is this perception that media is unbiased. There's no such thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think we all bring our human experience into a job. We all bring our perspectives, our culture, our everything. And we all are approaching our jobs with that in mind. So I think what we try to do is to peel back as many of the biases or stereotypes or anything that we might have and check those at the door. So when we do our job, that it is as almost as unbiased as we possibly can.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I wonder then if you have an opinion on people that are looking to try to really understand all sides of things that are happening in culture, the best way that they can digest news.
Well, I think you have to find the sources that do that. I mean, if you get on TikTok, everybody seems to be a journalist or thinks they're a journalist I think you really have to be discerning. And I think a lot of people don't spend enough time being discerning and thinking, okay, wait, hold up. All right, does that really make sense? And, there are sources that I go to that I know that are credible and I know that I can rely on, but those are very small. And I use those as kind of a guide to how I cover things in a way. But I think as a regular consumer of news, you really have to be discerning. And especially within light of AI, you have to really pay attention to what is really true and what is not.
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent point. So you mentioned TikTok and you talked about before you were a columnist, what you covered. So you covered many things, including culture and celebrity. And I'm just curious for your point of view, why is this country so addicted to celebrity news and gossip?
You know, I don't know. But I do think that it takes away from any of the issues that you have going on in your life. If you can, you know, channel that celebrity or immerse yourself in whatever they're doing. I mean, I'm a Prince fan and I was diehard about everything Prince. But, this is a different level because you have social media and you have all these different outlets where you can watch videos and this and that, and they're chronicling every aspect of these people's lives. I think it's just people get a little obsessed. And I think it's also just a way to escape. You know, I think a lot of people are struggling. A lot of people are going through things in their lives. And this is just a way to escape.
And you've interviewed so many amazing celebrities over the years. Do you want to just name a few? Want to name a few, Joy?
Well, I'm from Houston, so it has to be Beyonce, right? I was with People Magazine before I took the job as fashion editor at the Chronicle. And so People was open the door to me covering celebrities. And in the Chronicle, I covered a lot of celebrities with fashion lines or fragrance lines or shoe lines. There was that period where every celebrity had to have some kind of fashion brand and they all came to Houston. So I had the opportunity to interview a lot of them. And it was fun. It was absolutely fun. There's some that stand out more than others, but yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So you mentioned that this is a hard time for people. And, you know, I was so impressed to learn about you and hear about you having your own 501c3, which is a very difficult type of nonprofit to have. You have to, you have to adhere to really stringent rules. Can you tell us about the Year of Joy?
Oh, okay. I will try to tell you in brief. So there is Shonda Rhimes wrote the book Year of Yes, and Shonda Rhimes is the woman behind Grey's Anatomy and How to Get Away with Murder and Bridgerton. And I read her book and I was so moved by her story. She had lived this amazing life and had adopted several children, but just didn't, it was all off balance, could not find her sense of purpose in a way, and decided to have a year of yes, because she always said no to everything. So after I finished that book, I said, you know, I'm going to have a year of joy. And it had been a year, the prior year had been just, I think I was feeling burnout. As many journalists do, we get to the point where it's just like, you feel like you're running. And it's just like, okay, I need to just pump my brakes and slow down. And my year of joy turned into a way to bring joy to children. I was a former competitive ice skater, and I always wanted to create a space in which children from underserved communities had the opportunity to experience ice skating. So the first thing I did was have hosted an ice skating party that during the holidays. And it was amazing. We had 30 kids. In the eighth year, last December, we had 250 children.
Wow. And so are there things beyond ice skating that you're doing, or
anywhere? Sure.
How could we be involved?
Well, so before the pandemic, what I would do is the ice skating party was the big one where I would have several hundred children. And then every quarter I would do events focused on girls, girl empowerment, girl confidence. We did STEM workshops, etiquette workshops, movie nights, that type of thing. I have not gotten back into that since the pandemic. So my goal is to move back into that space. It's just pandemic kind of knocked a lot of us off our feet a little bit. So
it really did. So you mentioned that about Shonda Rhimes being a adoptive mother. And I know that you also are a foster to adoptive mother. Can we talk about that a bit?
So my adoption of my children was final last April. So we're at a year. We had our year anniversary of our family. We have been together for 5 years. So I went, I had always wanted to adopt. When I was in college, my cousin, older cousin, adopted a little girl. And I wrote an article for a local newspaper that I was working for about adoption. And that's when I learned how many children of color were in foster care who never, ever had the opportunity to have a forever family. And I made a promise to myself, if there was ever an opportunity to adopt, I would. And I started the journey about 10 years prior to me actually getting a placement. Yeah. And it took a long time because I had a lot of internal things with me. I never wanted to be a single woman adopting children. I never wanted, you know, I wanted to make sure that I had enough money as a journalist to support children. And then there were a number of things and you know, this industry, we were going through layoffs at one point. And so there, I was approved 3 times to be a foster parent and pulled out each time because of fear of these things I just mentioned. And then finally in 2019, I went on the Oprah cruise for an assignment, which was a great assignment. And I met Oprah and Gail. And I remember being on the balcony of the ship, this massive ship, and I prayed that God would give me the strength to either accept this as that this would happen, or if this wasn't my path, give me the strength to walk away. And 2 weeks later, I got the call about my daughter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, and I was placed with her. 1 month and 30 days, she had a biological brother in another home. They did not know each other. And I got the call about her brother, and he was a baby. And I had 2 hours to decide to take him.
And you did?
I did.
Wow. Yeah. So you have 2 children.
Yeah, it happened quickly. It happened quickly. And when I think about 2019, it was kind of crazy because I did not take maternity leave. I was a foster parent starting, so I was not able to take time off or anything. So I just went from single with 2 dogs to single with 2 dogs and 2 kids and a job, you know. So
I have to ask, how do you do it? How did you and how do you?
I had a lot of prayer. I prayed a lot. And you know what was amazing? I had a friend tell me, she said, when you do this, your village will shift. You might not, the people who you think might be around you, your village might be look a whole lot differently than you think it's going to be. And she was exactly right. there were women who I did not know at in any kind of, you know, social way. Maybe something, someone I had covered a story or they had heard about what I was doing. They sent food and money and clothing and just all. I did not struggle, and I was blessed by that. And I felt there was a sense of privilege that I had in that because of my job. I was exposed to so many amazing women, and so many showed up for me and my children, and I will forever be grateful.
That's amazing. Women helping women.
Really was.
It really, when it's done right, there's nothing like it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in terms of your family, poking around about the sewings, you come from a very distinguished family. And I've read about your great uncle, Henry Warren Sewing, and the pivotal role his bank, the first Black bank in the Midwest, played in history. I mean, could you tell us a little bit about that, just because it's so interesting?
The Sewing family, my Sewing family, is very small. There are not very many of us. I think they're probably under maybe 30 of us living now. But there were, my great uncle was from a small town in Texas, grew up sharecropping, extreme poverty, but he had an amazing, just a zest for life and education, and wanted to do so much better, I mean, more. And so he became educated, moved his entire family to the Midwest, to Kansas, Kansas City, Kansas, and founded a bank. And this is just during 1930s, 1940s, Jim Crow, the height of all of this. And I you know, he wrote an autobiography in the 70s before he died. He died in 1980. And I've just reread it again. And just I'm floored that he was able to do all that he was able to do during such a repressive time in our history. And when I read that, it just gives me, I guess, confidence that, okay, you know, what you're going through is not that bad.
Well, so you're from this family of firsts and achievers and doing things that you didn't expect. And you yourself, I mean, just listening to everything that you've done, and even, you know, you're from your foundation to fostering and adopting children on your own. I have to ask you this, especially now when people still, I think, are feeling demotivated, a lot of them are. What motivates you to do all this?
I had a friend, and I've had some amazing women who were older than me who became like kind of guides and mentors in a way. And one mentioned to me, this is about 10, 15 years ago, she said, there comes a point in your time, in your life, that you have to ask yourself, what kind of mark do you want to leave on this world? What do you want your legacy to be? And I never thought about that. And then, you know, as I've been moving forward, and especially now with my children, I think about that all the time. And it's not from an ego standpoint, but it's from a standpoint of, I really want to leave my world better than, you know, better for my children. And everything I do is really focused on trying to be the best and do that. So that, and my dad was very much like that. And he passed in 2020, and he would say, I have plenty of time to rest when I'm dead. That was his thing.
I have heard that before. So if people want to read what you're writing, they want to read your column, they want to follow you, what's the best way to do that?
I'm on the History Chronicles website, so it's they'll just look for my name, Joy Sewing. And I'm on social media platforms, although social media is just a little bit, you know, I'm this close to pulling off.
Are you really?
Yeah, because it's people are mean. There are very some kind people, but people are mean, and they react to headlines and they're not reading the stories, and then they'll see a headline, and then it just it becomes like this, like, yeah. So I'm this close. I'm on the edge. I will see how I last in the next month or so, but I might be pulling off of social media for a little bit just to give myself a break.
I know what you mean. So I would be remiss as a PR person by trade not to ask for my fellow PR people if somebody has a story or something that they want to make sure that you see. Is there a way that they can get in touch with you?
Email me most definitely. It's joy.sewing@houstonchronicle.com. And I get pitches that way. I actually get pitches from LinkedIn, and I don't mind that at all. I don't typically address pitches on Instagram or any of the social media platforms because they can be a little bit overwhelming. But the professional ones I do look at and respond to.
Is there anything, by the way, I have to ask one more PR question. Do you like them short, to the point? Do you like more information?
I like them short to the point, but I also like to have some type of local angle or something that somehow ties Houston into the conversation or whatever the issue is. That's what I'm really looking for. I still get pitches about fashion, which I'm not really doing that much anymore. We don't do gift guides. We don't do a lot of the things. A lot of the legacy publications have pulled away from doing those things because they don't have the space anymore. So I'm looking when it usually is related to an issue, and I'm looking for something that ties Houston into the conversation.
If nobody's been to Houston and it's their first time, I've never been. What are the top three things that they should definitely do, see, or eat?
Oh, wow. Well, okay. So we have the best food scene. If you don't know, now you know. Houston has the best food scene. Even if it's better than New York. I just want to tell you that. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh,
yeah. Spiting words.
We also have a great art scene, tremendous, talent in music and ballet and opera. And our museums are pretty incredible, too. So I would say the arts and the food.
The arts and the food. So until we meet in person, then, is there one piece of advice that has helped you through your life and your career that you could please share with us?
Ooh, well, the one piece of advice. I don't take myself so seriously. And I remember that there's another day to start all over again and keep moving forward and not get caught up so much in the fight, but really enjoy the ride. I think I spent a lot of my younger years so worried about trying to be a good journalist and get respect and everything. I didn't enjoy the ride, and that's what I'm trying to do more of.
I love that. Enjoy the ride. Thank you, Joy. It was such a, dare I say it, joy? No, that's awful. It was so wonderful to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you for having me.